Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome everybody to Mushing. This is Robert, and today I am joined by a returning guest and contributor to Mushing Magazine. Her name is Dr. Erica Bowling. She is calling in from Maine, and we're talking about an article that's going to be published in issue number 202, Reading Between the Strides, Spotting Weakness Before It Becomes Injury. Erica, before we jump into this, can you tell us briefly who you are and what you're all about, please?
Yes, I'm a former associate professor who have always had a passion for dogs and human and canine fitness. I started out with dogs as, you know, kind of a hobby and a passion in search and rescue with my entry into the working dog world. Got involved in protection sports in a sport called French Ring. And then that led into some detection work. I did narcotics detection with one of my Malinois. And through my own experiences and trainings, one of my dog got injured. And through the process of rehabbing and learning about fitness, learning about all the things I could have done differently, that just kind of sparked a new passion in canine fitness. And I basically started up a business, a canine fitness business that I was able to leave the university and follow my passion for dogs and fitness full time.
And with that business, I know you offer online courses, webinars, and the such, right?
Yes, correct.
And I know that you've written a few articles for Mushing Magazine. I think this is the third one, and they've all been sort of on that same plane, talking about fitness and gait and that sort of thing in the working dog. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You had mentioned a couple of working dog and sports you've been involved in. What is your primary activity with dogs now?
Well, I'm kind of in a transition right now. I recently had one of my senior dogs. He passed away due to cancer. And so I'm kind of in the process of thinking about, you know, starting up a young pup. And I'm exploring some other areas I want to expand in. And an area that I have been involved in the past, it wasn't my primary activity, was in the dry land mushing sports.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm kind of exploring getting more involved with the dry land mushing, and I would love to do some ski joring, but I need to improve my own skiing skills.
Yes, the human side of the learning curve is often much more difficult than the dog, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm like, you know, we're kind of moving out of the winter weather, and I'm thinking this coming winter, I really want to find a mentor and a coach to really help me up the game on my own skiing, because that's something I've been wanting to do for a number of years. We've had some sporadic snow here in Maine. I actually do have a dog sled when I moved to Maine, and the intention was I was going to do some of that. And soon after I moved here and bought the sled, arthritis started showing up in my dogs. They were about, you know, middle age. So I never actually, I've got this dog sled in the basement, and I've had it for a few years and I've never been able to use it.
And I know currently you live over near Bar Harbor, Maine, which to a lot of folks, when they think about Maine, they think about harsh winters and tons of snow and all that. Yeah. But it's a little bit different in your neck of the woods, isn't it?
It surprises a lot of people, since I'm on Mount Desert Island and, surrounded by the ocean. And it's actually a lot more mild on the coast. If you go inland, you'll get a lot colder weather. You'll get a lot more snow. Here on the island, a lot of times when the rest of Maine is getting snow, we get rain.
Right.
So we actually get a lot less snow here than much of Maine, which is surprising because people think, you know, in Maine, it's, you know, crazy snow. I've actually been, I have some friends over in Scandinavia and I've been kind of watching the weather over there. And this past winter, pretty consistently, we here where I am has been colder here than over in, say, like Oslo and definitely the Bergen area, but not cold enough to really keep some. This year we had a little bit more snow, but yeah, it's definitely more mild and a lot more mild than most people expect here on the coast.
Well, since the last time we had you on the podcast, you and I met up for lunch right there in your town, your hometown, I guess it would be right now, and got a chance to sit down and talk a little bit, talk about our business goals for each other and what the future holds and all that. So there are some big things coming for you, and we're excited to be a part of that journey, at least on the magazine side. But I'm really excited to jump into this next article. Are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
So as we mentioned at the top, we're talking about an article in issue 202, Reading Between the Strides, Spotting Weakness Before It Becomes Injury. This is all about posture and stride and top lines and all of that. And if you know about dog sports, you know exactly what we're going to talk about. But intro the article or thesis of this, and then we'll jump into it.
Yeah, the main focus here is a lot of times with our sporting working dogs, they're, you know, high drive, high energy. And I hear so many people say that their dogs don't show pain. You know, they work through it. They work through the pain. And it's like, they give us a lot of signs. There's a lot of signs of potential issues, or even not necessarily an injury, but, you know, areas that are weaker, compensations they're doing that if we don't acknowledge it and take care of it, it can become an injury. And so what kind of sparked this is helping people look at their dog more critically. I call it your critical eye, critical observation skills. So we start to just naturally do a better job of paying really close attention and understanding what to watch for, to pick up on the early signs of things that you know, show potential areas of weakness, potential compensations, potential areas of pain that maybe we normally wouldn't miss normally we would miss without paying really close attention. And it's kind of training those observation skills, because frequently what happens is if anybody has had an injured dog before, when we think they're injured or we know they're injured, we start looking at them really, really closely. We're like, oh my gosh, is he limping? You know, is it the front right? Is it the back? Well, you know, how bad is he limping? And then when they're recovering, it's like, is he still limping? Is the limping gone? And we start to look at them really, really closely. And so what I like to talk with people about and teach people is, you know, bringing that critical observation lens to just the day to day, so that we can pick up on those subtle signs earlier and not wait until after the fact, after they're injured, you know, after they're in pain, and then it's obvious, right? So that was kind of what sparked this kind of the topic for this article.
So being heavily involved in dog sports, whether it be dog mushing or ring sports or protection or agility or whatever, we're often pretty attuned to our observation skills. We know how this dog's gait is supposed to be, so on and so forth. But of course, Erica, there are a lot of listeners to our podcast that may dabble in sports or work with their dogs, and they don't quite have the observation skills that somebody that does it every day may have. And that is our first talking point, is that training skill that we must develop in observing how our dogs move and what those subtle signs, like you said, is my dog limping? Is he, you know, is he favoring one side or the other? Talk about that as a skill to develop, at least from the human eye.
Yeah, the big thing here is kind of noticing imbalances and looking at things that are more kind of symmetrical or asymmetrical and balanced and unbalanced in our dogs. And so looking at things like for example, how they sit, how they stand, how they walk, looking at muscle shape and muscle tone. I can't tell you how many times I've seen dogs with like distinctly like one quadricep, you know, larger than the other, and the owner, you know, completely like not even realizing there's a huge, you know, difference in the muscle mass. And the idea is to, you know, pay attention to how our dog is just laying around the house, or how they're, you know, sitting and doing things between activities and playing. And sometimes they'll be very, very sloppy and, you know, legs all sprawled out, you know, sitting crooked. But the thing is when we start to watch them really closely and start to see that the key here is starting to notice the patterns and seeing patterns of behavior. Because, you know, you might have a dog that is, you know, a young dog, and they're just, you know, kind of sloppy, and they, you know, flop on the floor, and they're, you know, not super balanced. But the thing is when you start paying really close attention and you start to notice sometimes that they have a tendency to always put the left hip on the side versus the right hip when they're in a down, or you might start to notice that when they're sitting, then their legs are all kind of sloppy and out to the side. You start to notice that they have a tendency to have the right knee is out more than the left knee. And so this is really important, is when you start to see repetitive patterns in how the dog is moving and sitting and downing, is if you're seeing something that they're favoring, you know, they tend to lean more to one side or the other, or one leg is, you know, more propped out to the side than the other, is those are imbalances. And even if it could be a sign of, you know, a dog might be stronger on one side versus the other, they may be more, you know, have muscle tightness on one side versus the other, they may be actually in pain. With my own dog, he would do that more with the left leg, the back left leg, than the right, because he had an injury and he had more discomfort on the back left leg. He wasn't limping, but the fact that when he was sloppy and sitting sloppy, and it was always that back left side, that was a sign I had missed, that he actually was hurting, and there were no other obvious signs but the way he was sitting. And so it's starting to pick up on what is normal for your dog and kind of what are the patterns and what are these kind of patterns with these imbalances. Because even if your dog is not injured at the time, if you think about it, if I sit at my computer desk and I'm slouched over the desk and I, you know, hunch over with my head over, you know, my computer, and I don't have good posture and I'm crooked in how I'm sitting, if I do that a lot for many hours, for many days, you know, ultimately that can actually create an issue and create soreness and stiffness. And when your dog has imbalances like that, and you're pushing the body in training and pushing in the body in competition, those weak areas or those tense areas that you're creating from those repetitive behaviors are prime areas that could then potentially lead to an injury. So part of it is being really observant and not just noticing, oh, your dog is, you know, off on that day, or, you know, that they're sitting crooked that one time, but it's developing just a natural habit and noticing this all the time. And then when you start to see those pattern behaviors of those imbalances, potential compensations, like that's when those red flags go. It's like, is there something going on? Do I need to explore it more deeply? Or is it that we have just simply an imbalance of strength and weakness in their muscles, or an imbalance in flexibility? And if we don't attend to it now, it could potentially lead to an injury when we're pushing them in our training and you know, competition.
And of course, dogs are notorious maskers, especially sled dogs. When they're out on a run, they're doing what they want to do. And whether they are injured or not, they do a pretty good job of hiding it, like you said, until they stop, and we do recognize those patterns and then move forward. In your article, Erica, you talk about using your phone to record videos of runs and, of course, on playtime. And I was thinking about when I was in my bachelor program in the HPER department at UAA, they had us do a project where they used some type of software program that measured biomechanics, sort of like a PowerPoint program that you can, you know, measure distances and gait and all those sorts of things. And I just found it fascinating where even just doing a normal walk, I thought I was walking perfectly fine. But then when you do the measurements over time, you notice how things begin to develop. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right?
Yep. Yeah. Except if you don't have the technologies, I know there's not a lot. I've not seen a lot of veterinarians that have them or kind of training centers where they have these mats that you can actually walk and trot the dog over, and it will calculate and capture all the data on each footfall, the length of the stride, how much weight they put on each foot, and it gives you like just amazing data. And if anybody has a chance, if they've not done, if you ever have a chance to do like a gait analysis like that, where you can actually measure all of that, I would highly recommend it. But the thing is, you know, a lot of times we don't have the expensive tools and technologies and things like that to, you know, go and use the mats and all the technology to record it. And so a simple, you know, easy, quick thing is, you know, pretty much most people have a cell phone with them. and anything that we can do to try to capture like, you know, those observations or data points and even things for comparison. You know, for example, when my dog was injured, a lot of people and veterinarians and, you know, a lot of those subtle signs we missed. Once I had him diagnosed, and I actually went back and found some old photos and some old videos. And after I knew what to look for, I could see that there were some subtle signs earlier. And sometimes I've had people where a dog ended up with an injury, and then they remember, they're like, oh yeah, I remember a few months ago, I remember he was sore, but I can't remember what leg it was. And so another powerful thing is having some kind of documentation like that to, you know, in a phone, you can freeze frame it, you can do slow motion, you can rewind it. And that really helps in the observation, because trying to catch all that detail when the dog's moving and trotting or running is really hard or impossible. But it also is a great thing to do for comparing over time. If you ever have something come up and you're trying to problem solve and figure out, you know, what's going on, or, you know, there's an injury and you're trying to, you know, diagnose that, it's also a great thing to capture, to have that information and that data that you can have. And in research, we call it triangulation of data, having those multiple data points and multiple bits of information to inform. And that can be really, really helpful if you're dealing with something over time, to see if there's improvement, but also to see if there's a deterioration of movement, or if you have a potential injury and you're trying to, you know, work with veterinarians and medical professionals to try to get a diagnosis. I've had a number of clients and students in our programs that have learned about the, you know, analyzing structure and movement, and they take these videos and they're like, oh my gosh, I think there's something's wrong with my dog. And they've taken the photos and the videos to their veterinarians, and it helped a number of them in getting that diagnosis, because taking the dog to the vet and they're all excited or stressed, it can be hard to capture, you know, some of this information when they're in the veterinarian's office. So it can be useful in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you're so right about the access to technology and a phone. I mean, it's such a great piece of tool in your toolkit to be able to use that. I remember, as we're talking about that, I remember going to a pretty fancy shoe store, and they had one of those gait analysis things sort of on a treadmill, and it did all that. And they said, yep, you need this kind of shoes because you have plantar fasciitis and so on and so forth. It was just so cool to be able to just go into a place. And if I remember, I think it was free. Of course, they were trying to sell me pretty high-end shoes, but it provided that data that allowed me to make a decision. That's exactly what we're talking about in this article, right?
Yeah. Is training, you know, number one is, if you're not observing closely enough, you're missing those multiple points. Cause it might, like I said, you might see a dog and, you know, he tends to sit and shift its weight to its right hip and you don't think anything of it. But if you start to see that they shift the right hip in the sit and they shift the right hip in the down, and then you notice when they're pulling, you know, they're veering in one direction more than the other, then now you start to go, ooh, you know, you start to notice and kind of, those are your data points to say, you know what, I have, instead of just having that sloppy sit in the kitchen, I actually have instances in six different scenarios in six different environments where I keep seeing something happening with the right leg, the back right leg. And then that's when it's like, all right, that's the red flag and something that we need to definitely look further into that.
So let's talk about the top line. Enthusiasts know exactly what we're talking about when we mentioned that in the dog. And also you mentioned in the article about taking video from the back, thinking about on a dog sled, and we're videoing our dogs as they're moving down the trail. And a lot of times we think that we're being really observant of our dogs, but when we have 10, 12, 14, 16 dogs in harness, we're out there for a training run and we hope to catch things, but often we miss it because we're literally looking at the backs of 12 to 14 to 16 dogs all working at once in tandem. And a lot of things can be missed when you have multiple dogs, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So can you tell us about this top line for folks that may not know what that is? What are they looking at and what should they see as, you know, in research, of course, you don't want to say what is normal, but what should they be looking for?
Yeah, and a lot of our working breeds, typically we want a flat, you know, along their spine, we want a flat top line. So we don't want like big roaching and rounding of the back and kind of a hunching over and a nice level, kind of a neutral spine. And so some of the things you look for is a key area, high stress area for any kind of dog that's super active where they carry a lot of their stress and tension is in their lower back, just like humans. And so, and it's typical for a dog that's, you know, just really, really active. You'll see that as they start to fatigue or as they start to muscles just get tense or tired, it's not unusual. You start to see kind of some rounding and some roaching of the kind of that lower back. And some dogs will be lower down further, you know, in the lower part of the back or the lower third. And by observing that, you can see, like you might start and the dogs are fresh. They've been well rested. They're nice and loose and fluid and their top line's, you know, nice and flat. And I've literally, like my own dog, when I've done like 3-day seminars and I've done like an all day seminar, I could see over a period of one day as he started getting fatigued and as those muscles were getting tired, I could actually start to see throughout the day, he started to get a little bit more rounded and more tight, more tension in the lower back. And the thing here is what happens a lot with our sport and working dogs is we do a lot of stuff that works the muscles really hard, but a lot of times we're ignoring things like relaxing, massage, flexibility, stretching. And so if we're just doing a lot of work, working the dogs and not letting those muscles have opportunities to relax, to kind of elongate, get more back to that resting state, then again, that's an area that can break down over time from just that, you know, working it over and over and over, the muscles stay tight. You're going to have compensations. It's going to affect their overall, you know, fluid movement. It's going to affect their range of motion. They're going to have shorter strides. And if you just keep working them and don't deal with those imbalances, you can end up with an injury. So a key area that I always like to look for is, do I see any changes? What is the normal top line for the dog? What's normal for the breed? And then am I starting to see at the beginning of the run or at the end of the run, am I seeing more signs of tension and tightness? Am I starting to see some roaching of the spine? It can also be a sign of pain. So I watch closely to see any changes as the dog's working, changes across the day, across the week. And then I also notice where, you know, if you start to see a little bit of that rounding or that tension, what part of the back is it happening in? And then the other things that I look along the top line, and this is where videotaping and looking at slow motion, is looking at the movement, and again, go back to the symmetry and the balance, is I will look at things like the shoulders and the hips. And as they're striding, you know, you see that, you know, when they're trotting, let's say they're trotting, you see that little bounce, that up and down movement. You see the head movement, the shoulder movement, the hindquarters. And when you do it in slow motion and really slow it down, you'll see a, you know, up and down, a rise and fall. You'll see the shoulder blades as they're, you know, reaching and taking a stride, and the shoulder blades are going up and down. You see the, you know, the hips and the pelvic bones. And what you'll see sometimes when there's some issues going on is it will affect the stride length of the dog. It can affect the elevation of how high they lift their leg. So let's say you have, you know, a tight muscle in the back right leg. Sometimes what you'll see with the compensation is you'll actually see that when they're trotting, you'll see maybe one side of their hip, like maybe on the right side, you may see one side drop down a little bit lower than the other side. So if you're looking at nice, balanced, perfect symmetrical movement, you're going to see as they're stepping, you know, when the shoulder blade goes down and up and down and up as they're striding, you're going to see a balance. You're going to see that they're kind of that bounce, that nice level bounce is going to be level. But when you assign sometimes that there might be a potential issue going on, is you might see, you know, one side lift a little bit higher than the other. And it's not a real distinct lameness. You're not seeing necessarily a dog limping, but you're seeing a distinct difference in potentially the range of motion. And you might not be able to see the dog's front feet, you know, and you're not looking at a video of the side of the view. Sometimes if we're looking from the back of the dog, we will see it in how level they are in the movement, in the steps. And you look at like the level of the hips, the pelvic bone, the rise and fall, and also looking at the withers around the shoulders of the dog. So some things, like if I'm watching the side of the dog, it might look like a really nice, balanced, smooth trot. And you might not see that imbalance until you actually stand or sit and you look behind the dog. So getting, when we're assessing dogs, when we're doing like an analysis of movement and structure, we always like to capture views of the dog from the back, from the front, and from the side, because you're going to see different things from each viewpoint. And something that's going to be highlighted in one, like from the side, you might not see from the back, and what you can see from the back, you might not see from the side. So it's just another vantage point. So usually when I'm looking from behind, I'll be looking at things. A lot of times I'll be looking at the hips, the pelvic bones, the withers, how the shoulders, you know, the rise and fall, and of course the head. And I've seen dogs where on a treadmill where there's no obvious sign of lameness at all. And as soon as you do it in slow motion, it's like, wow, a very distinct head bobbing that is really easy to miss when the dog's just kind of trotting quickly without doing it in slow motion. And so those are the types of things that I'll look for whenever I'm looking at the top line and the movement of how the dog is moving. And a trot is a really good gait. A walk and a trot is a good gait to analyze it. For example, in a trot, when you're moving, the dogs are moving with the two diagonal legs in unison. So the front right leg is moving in unison with the back left leg, and the front left leg is moving in unison with the back right leg. And it's a very balanced stride. And so the left and the right side, they're moving equally. If you have a dog doing like a gallop, or if anybody has a background with horses and they're doing like a canter, it's like a three beat gait. And you have like one leg leading, and then you have two diagonal legs, and then you have like a trailing leg. And in a trot, because of the balance of the movement, is a really nice gait and a walk. A walk and a trot to notice potential signs of imbalances.
Erica, there is a lot there that we talked about. And of course, you can get much more information about that in the article as well. If you were to give our listeners one key takeaway from this, what would you want them to leave with?
I would say, you know, of course, to start observing their dogs more closely, but you know, that's very general. I would say, pick one area to start paying a little bit more attention on. You know, look at, you know, the movement of the back left, you know, the back legs from behind, or look at the stride from the front. And pick one body part that you want to look more closely at. Look at things like the range of motion. You know, are they equally stepping the same in the right versus the left? And just pick one body part that you want to start observing closely. And what's really helpful is if you can watch different dogs. especially if you're used to one particular breed and you just kind of get used to how that movement works and you just kind of take things for granted. But if you can start like watching, pick a body part, pick a, you know, a movement, a walk, a trot, watch your dogs closely, but also try to look at another breed or try to look at another dog. Because when you do those comparisons, when you're comparing and you see some distinct differences, it makes some of the things we take for granted that we don't notice stand out a lot more. And so I find that the more dogs we observe and also the different types of movements and different structured dogs, different breeds of dogs, it will help us to go back and look at the movement that we see every day and look at it with a new lens. So I would say just start, you know, observing closely and maybe start by pinpointing one body part and start paying more attention. Videotape if you can, but don't just observe your dog. You know, look at other people's dogs in the same way and try to see different breeds. It's going to help you look at your own dogs in a with that more critical lens.
Erica, great stuff there. Where can folks go to learn more about you and your programs?
Yep, they can go to our website. It's northeastcanineconditioning.com. It's the letter K and the number 9, northeastcanineconditioning.com for our website. You can also, we're Northeast Canine Conditioning on Facebook, we're on Instagram. And then also, I would say our most popular program, our most comprehensive program is our Elite Canine Athlete program. And they can just go, anybody listening can go to elitecanineathlete.com. Again, it's the letter K and the number 9, not the word canine, but the letter K, the number 9. So elitecanineathlete.com. And that that will give them more information if they wanted to check out our most comprehensive program on canine fitness. It's specifically focused on sport and working dogs.
And we will definitely put all the links here in the show notes. And if you are a fan of ours over on our Mushing Facebook page, just about every time that Erica drops a new program or has signups or whatever, we will promote links to those programs for sure. Erica, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much. And we'll talk again about the next article in Mushing number 203.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. On behalf of my guest today, this is Robert from Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.